100 fires are racing tonight across the tinder forests of Maine, New Hampshire, and Massachusetts. This is the fourth week of the Indian summer drought. Tonight is a night of terror for many woodland and coast communities.
If you've spent time in Bar Harbor, chances are you would have encountered a story about the Great Fire of 1947.
Here is W.W. Chaplin at station WCSH, Portland, Maine.
Tens of thousands are fighting the flames to save their homes. A switch in wind seems to have saved famous Bar Harbor, but a wall of fire now sweeps toward Ford and Rockefeller Estates at Seal Harbor.
Hearing the stories left us with questions. How did this fire change the landscape, and how did it impact the community?
We're your hosts, Purva
and Maisie.
And this is Through the Dooryard,
a podcast for the Bar Harbor Historical Society.
Bar Harbor, with the glamour of the Gilded Age and the charm of Acadia, has been a popular summer escape since the mid-1800s. From the Rockefellers to the Vanderbilts, the wealthy came to Bar Harbor to find a comfortable seclusion in their grand cottages. Mostly from cities like New York, Philadelphia, or Boston, the Bar Harbor Express brought passengers to Down East Maine, where they boarded the Mount Desert Ferry to Bar Harbor.
If you took the train, let's say from Boston, you would go from Boston to Portland. You change trains in Portland to Bangor or Brewer, and there you either had the opportunity to take a, most people got on the train and went from Bangor to Hancock Point. At Hancock Point, you get on the steamer.
Oh, by the way, that's Aaron Koff, the executive director for the Bar Harbor Historical Society. Let's continue.
And then you'd come over, and that in and of itself was 3 days. So basically three different modes of transportation in 3 days, 3 or 4 days.
Seems like a lot just to get to this tiny town off the coast of Maine.
I guess that's the point though, that seclusion away from the city. At the height of the cottage era, there were grand estates dominating the shoreline and hillside above Bar Harbor. La Rochelle, the current home of the Bar Harbor Historical Society, is one such estate that still exists.
Really, to this day, we're still kind of surfing along on the reputation of the town's golden age with the millionaires and the fancy houses. And that's one of the reasons Bar Harbor got a lot of attention, I think, resources too, because it had that name. You know, it's like Newport. It's like other places. They just, you know, are you going to let Newport burn? Well, not if you can help it.
And that was Earl Brecklin, the immediate past president for the Bar Harbor Historical Society. And we sat down with Aaron and Earl to talk about what was going on in Bar Harbor leading up to the fire of 47 to really understand its sociocultural and economic impact on the town. With its growing popularity, Bar Harbor was changing. We're talking about a shift from carriages to cars, from rich people to merchants and entrepreneurs, and from grand summer estates to hotels, and lots of people in those hotels.
Bar Harbor grew from the idea that we were able to have those cars, those trucks, people coming onto the island, especially after the bridge was built, the Trenton Bridge was built. Once that came over, it was, Bar Harbor boomed, right? Because it wasn't just the summer residents who had to take the train to get to another train, to get to a steamer. But if you had a car, you could come up for 2 or 3 weeks and you could live in a hotel. It was a different experience. And so Bar Harbor hotels grew. The Rodick itself, 1,000 people would stay at that hotel. I mean, that's what they could accommodate. That's what they could serve for dinner alone. Which is, right? It's mind-blowing.
It it certainly wasn't the town's golden age, which was in the early 1900s.
A lot of wealthy people were just over the hustle and bustle of Bar Harbor. You had 5,000 people a night staying in hotels in Bar Harbor. That's a lot of food. That's a lot of water that's got to be brought in. That's a lot of milk bottles in the morning. That's a very, you know, that gets to be busy and noisy. Very similar to what we have today with the tractor trailer trucks coming in with food and everything else. Where Mount Desert was quieter. So a lot of those people who had cottages here after the fire of 47, if they wanted to rebuild, didn't rebuild here in Bar Harbor. It was quieter. It was much more village-like, the European villages in Mount Desert. So that's why they went over to that side of the island.
But with the threat of World War II looming over the country, how was Bar Harbor handling things in the 1940s?
As the war continued, less people were traveling. There was less means to get up. There was less petroleum available. All of the shortages and things that started to happen started to affect, of course, resort towns. And so while it was starting to calm down and quiet down a little bit, not as much tourism, downtown Bar Harbor, or the Bar Harbor itself, was actually still thriving in the point that it would take in 5 or 6 months worth of income and be able to stretch that through the entire year. So the year-round economy was actually doing really, really well. The people who were coming here, not as much. And so the disposable income for the rest of the country was starting to disappear. Second homes were starting to become a burden, so those were starting to sell off. By the time the war ended, the whole U.S. economy was still starting to, we were actually sliding into a bit of a recession. And the engine that had made all of the money for the United States was disappearing, right?
This instability, this dip in the economy right after World War II, meant that many people didn't have the disposable income to spend summers vacationing. Second houses were left empty or sold. Hotels weren't as full. That summer income that many people in Bar Harbor relied on was stretched thinner.
So you weren't getting those summer residents coming up. You weren't getting those tourists who were coming up. The hotels and things that had burned, there was no desire to rebuild them. They had been basically put together very quickly for a large group of people, and those group of people weren't coming here. So the impact of that fire was more than just losing the buildings. We lost jobs here in Bar Harbor. We lost an economy for several years of people who just trying to get by from having that great boom in 5 or 6 months worth of income that could last 12 months, they were actually just trying to get by now on what was coming in.
So this is where Bar Harbor finds itself in October of 1947, in an economic dip with the rest of the country, still able to live off of the tourism and wealth of the summers, but just a little quieter. Mrs. Gilbert is the one who called in the smoke first. It came up from the ground of a cranberry bog behind her house, rising from the peat.
Next time on Through the Dooryard.
The thing that I remember the most about all of this is the smell. I'll really never forget that acrid odor, and it's a very distinct odor if anybody has been around forest fires. When you smell it, you know there's a forest fire. It's not like a wood stove odor. It's different.
We hear some of the first-hand accounts of those who survived the fire, and we'll talk about what was lost in the fire. A big thank you to the Swan Agency for letting us use their beautiful podcast space, and to Earl Brecklin and Aaron Koff for sitting down with us. Learn more about the Bar Harbor Historical Society at barharborhistorical.org, and we'll see you next time.